The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play! Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is going to go.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
And happy Monday. It's never happy Monday, but happy Monday, everybody. And welcome to slightly beyond the box score. Jacob's not here today, so Dan and I will take you just a little bit beyond the box score today with some advanced stats and some good analysis. But really, we're just going to be killing time until Jacob's back next week. What's up, Dan Schneier? How you doing?
Doing well today, Adam, as well as I can be, being somebody who covers and is a fan of the New York Football Giants.
I love it, man. Great win by the Cardinals yesterday. Great win. I've embraced the tank. The Nathaniel York Giants, because they are tank. So anyway, Dan.
What? Tank what was Dell. That Nathaniel York?
Tank Dell is Nathaniel reference. Dell, so they're Nathaniel York tank.
Oh, my God. That was one of your worst ever.
I tweeted it yesterday.
That's unbelievable.
Workshopping it. Who are you excited to talk about today, Dan?
There are a few players I'm excited to talk about. Trey McBride is one of them. Tank Dell, who you just made a horrific joke trying to use his name, is another one. I'm also excited to talk a little bit about what we're seeing out of David Montgomery, my boy.
Your boy. My boy. He's mine. He's been my boy.
He is not your boy. Jonathan Taylor, because volume is everything in fantasy football, and I really like what I saw. Mike Evans. So we'll get into a bunch of those players. I'm also going to talk a little bit, and we're going to talk a little bit about Brian Robinson and Sam Howell and that Commanders offense, because that's the game I watched the most tape on this week. I saw that whole game on tape. And so there's some things we're going to talk about. Also, for those tuning into the show, Adam, I am going to do at one point, because for some of who we're going to talk about, Adam, I plan to use some Jacob Gibbs data.
Ooh.
Because Jacob Gibbs has still put out some good data today, even though he is traveling and couldn't make the show. So I will, for those who are tuning in for the remainder of the show, maybe something to look forward to, do my best at trying a Jacob Gibbs impression when I read off Jacob Gibbs stats. Oh, yeah.
Looking forward to that. And then, Jacob, if you're listening, you have a week to work on your Dan Schneier impression. We're also going to give you some playoff DSTs to focus on and some rest of season league winners. We'll start, though, with the Raiders and the Jets. I cannot believe the Jets lost that game. That was one of the best games I've ever seen Zach Wilson play. And they still lost. I thought he was fine. I mean, the interception was bad, but he was scrambling really nicely. He was fine. And I mean, they had 8 penalties for 83 yards. They outgained the Raiders 365 to 274. They had a touchdown, a Breece Hall touchdown called back on a holding penalty.
Yep.
And that was really it. I mean, I think Robert Saleh said after the game they had 5 trips into their territory and it was like 3 field goals and a turnover, something like that. So I thought they blew it. But hey, good job by the Raiders. And we know what the Raiders' identity is now. If you listen to the broadcast, I thought this was fascinating. Josh Jacobs said that for the first time since the John Gruden era, so it didn't happen at all under Josh McDaniels, the coaching staff asked him which running plays he liked and what he wanted to be part of the game plan. Now, before I flip out and say I can't believe that Josh McDaniels' regime did that, I don't know how common that is, but but it's clear Antonio Pierce is making Josh Jacobs the focal point of the offense, which is bad for everyone other than Josh Jacobs, but they're not going to win every game. They're not going to be able to just run the ball the entire second half like they did. But that is what we heard. He loves Robert Spillane, who had the interception, the basically game-sealing interception. And I thought that Ruptured Spillane was a funny team name, personally. And then he loves Josh Jacobs. He wants to make Josh Jacobs the identity of the offense. He wants a tough, hard, you know, physical downhill running team. What are your fantasy takeaways from Jets and Raiders?
Yeah, starting with the Raiders, that's exactly right. We're seeing Antonio Pierce have an identity for this team, and it's going to be operate through Jacobs. And what you said, first of all, I like the Robert Spillane one a lot better than the other the joke you had, but yeah. It's actually pretty decent. Ruptured Spillane. Unfortunately, he's not an offensive skill player, so we can't really use that. Otherwise, you know, if you had that to work with, we can come up with a lot of good names. You know, you're going a little off script here, Adam. This is a little, you know, you're pushing it a little far, but this is what you
do. That's what I do. Yep. Beyond the box score, beyond the script.
It's beyond the script, game script. But so like on one hand, I want to say, Adam, that I don't think they're going to be able to do this every week. And that's probably true. But I look at the Raiders schedule now, right? Let's take a look at what's left on the schedule, because this is big.
Go ahead, I'm Dan, sorry. Because they just played the Giants and the Jets. Their next two games are the Dolphins and the Chiefs.
Dolphins, I was going to say, they have the Dolphins-Chiefs stretch, but if we get through that Vikings game, I could see that being good, solid game script. Chargers, honestly, I could see that being good game script. Chiefs, again, that's no good. But Colts, that's another one. So we're going to get at least half of the, and then Broncos. We're going to get, well, that's not going to be part of the fantasy playoffs. We're going to get half the games, though, of decent game script, which is not bad. And Jacob's obviously getting the football. He broke his biggest run toward the end of the game, got in a groove. And I like the idea of what you said, because it's more common than you think. All the good coaches work with their players and try to put in the concepts that fit rather than try to fit a system around the player. All the bad coaches who end up fired in the NFL and not long for the NFL are the ones who try to fit their players into their system. That's bad football. Saw it with Jason Garrett, with the Giants. We've seen it with Josh McDaniel here. So I think your takeaway is right, that basically Josh Jacobs becomes the only player on this offense to really get excited about for fantasy.
Whoa. That was not my takeaway.
That was your takeaway.
I said he's the focal point of the offense. It's not how I feel. I think that
you said it's bad news for everyone else.
No, it is if they're gonna try
That's what I mean.
I'm saying, okay, but I don't think they're gonna be able to do that. If their philosophy is to throw the ball 25 times a game, that's bad news for Davante Adams. Especially bad news for Jakobi Meyers.
It's worse for Jakobi Meyers. That's the one I think is really the sell now type of play.
Nobody's buying him. I think he's played three games with Aiden O'Connell. He's been terrible in all three, except he had a rushing touchdown against the Giants. I think he's an easy sit at this point. Adams is back to the Adams is a must start. It was a good game, not a great game. He had so much production in the first quarter, and then he kind of disappeared. But again, I just don't think they're going to be able to just run the ball 27 times every week. I don't think they're going to win every week. I still think they're a below average team. It's Adams and Jacobs, and that's it, right? All right. Yeah.
It is, but I would say this. There were some positive signs from a processing standpoint, and this is just based on the broadcast angle. I didn't watch the tape on this game. From what Aiden O'Connell was able to do from getting off of his first read, there were multiple moments in that game, including the touchdown pass, where he came off the play side read and threw to the backside. And that's something you don't typically see from rookie quarterbacks. And I don't think he's anything too special at quarterback or is going to kind of change too much there. But it's a good sign to, in my mind, to see that happening from a processing standpoint. It didn't exactly happen with Jimmy Garoppolo either.
All right, for the Jets, Garrett Wilson is a must start. He gets 13 targets every week now. He gets a ton of catches. Almost had that Hail Mary at the end. That was really something. And Zach Wilson has now thrown for 240, 263, and 263 yards in his last three games. So that's good. That's on 36, 49, and 39 pass attempts. But the story here is Breece Hall. Over the last 4 weeks, I would say Breece Hall is probably the worst running back in football. Not in fantasy, but in football. There have been 39 running backs over the last 4 weeks with 30 or more carries. Okay, 39. He is last in rush EPA, last in success rate, third to last in yards before contact per carry, last in yards after contact per carry, 16th in avoid rate, that's fine, last in percentage of carries for five or more yards, and last in explosive run rate, which is percentage of carries for 12 or more yards as defined by True Media. Do we have concerns here? You know, he's doing enough in the passing game, but let's see. In this game, it was how many points did he score in this game? Like 10-ish, 10, 11. And that's what he scored last week. He scored 10 against the Chargers. You have any concerns about Breece Hall?
Depends what, you know, from what standpoint and what front you're asking from Adam, because I did go back and watch some of his tape. I've seen the game he played against the Giants fully on tape, every single play there. I just think the reason he's not producing right now in the run game is almost exclusively due to two factors. One, the Jets offensive line, and two, the certainty that teams have for playing the Jets run first. I mean, they are, you watch how teams play this Jets offense. There's just no concern at all for the deep halves of the field. There's no concern at all for Zach Wilson doing anything with the football. They are keyed in to stop Breece Hall on every snap. And if they don't go to Breece Hall with a play action or a pass call, they're not worried about it, these opposing defenses. So that combo of bad O-line, I mean, you watch some of these carries, Adam, and he's blown up in the backfield, or the penetration is there. There's no cutback lane. There's no hole. There's nowhere to process. There's nowhere to do. Like, sure, the yards after contact stat you brought up, which is bad, is not great. But yards before contact being third to worst kind of shows what I'm talking about. And then the fact that he can still avoid tackles is probably a decent sign. So for fantasy standpoint, I am considering him less of an asset than people did after his breakout games earlier this season, like a few weeks back, just because that offense is so bad. This is how I treat all running backs in bad offenses. But I think from an NFL standpoint, I'm not too worried about Breece Hall.
All right, and let's go. Would you rather have Rashad White or Breece Hall rest of season?
That's a fair, good question. And I think they're very comparable assets for fantasy rest of season, despite Breece Hall being a better talent.
All right, I'd rather have Breece Hall, but it is worth asking at this point. Well, we usually tell you about what Jacob has on Sportsline, but there's a lot of stuff on Sportsline that you'll like. Jacob, of course, has the Beyond the Box Score article. You can use the promo code Gibbs. You can use the promo code FOLLOW to get 60% off an annual plan. Forget about the 1 month plan. How about the annual plan? 60% off if you use the promo code FOLLOW on sportsline.com. So we've got video content on Sportsline. We've got gambling. We've got fantasy. We've got DFS. We've got content from Dave, Jamie, and Heath, and of course, Jacob. It's all on Sportsline. It's a tremendous, valuable resource. It's $9.99 a month. And for the annual subscription, you can get 60% off with the code FOLLOW. You probably spend more than that on dinner. FOLLOW is the promo code, sportsline.com. News and notes, Derek Carr, good chance he's back after the bye. They're at Atlanta. Keenan Allen, I think he's fine. Michael Thomas, knee. Deshaun Watson hurt his ankle. They are playing Pittsburgh this week. And I don't know that he's going to be able to play. I mean, I assume he will, but he's dealing with the shoulder and he hurt his ankle as well. Mac Jones benched. Taylor Heinicke, hamstring injury. And Arthur Smith said he's not announcing his starting quarterback yet. Alexander Mattison left with a concussion, so I wouldn't expect him to play this week. Devon Achane has been designated to return from IR. That's awesome. Panthers cornerback J.C. Horn has been designated to return from IR. That's also great. He's a very good player when he stays on the field, which is unfortunately very rare. Some of the big injuries, two defensive backs injured for the Browns, Juan Thornhill and Denzel Ward. Don't know the severity there. Quan Alexander out for the season. That's another middle linebacker for the Steelers. 2 weeks in a row, they've lost their defensive signal caller. They're at Cleveland in week 11. I told you about some cornerback injuries that we'll be keeping an eye on. Tyson Campbell for Jacksonville. Marlon Humphrey for the Ravens. Caleb Evans for the Vikings. Marshawn Lattimore for the Saints. These are all starters, all important players. And the Giants are like now the most injured team in the world as they get Washington next week. And then here's some stats, since it's a stat show, right? This is according to ESPN. The Browns, the Cleveland Browns, trailed for 59 minutes and 20 seconds in this game, in the game on Sunday. No NFL team this millennium, not sure why they phrased it that way, but this millennium had won while trailing for that long in a game, according to ESPN stats and information. We had a record on Sunday. Five games were decided on a last-second game-winning field goal. That's the most in a single day in NFL history. Trey McBride became the first Cardinals tight end with 100 yards in a game since 1989. That was the longest 100-yard game for a tight end drought by any team. And CeeDee Lamb is the first player with 10 or more catches for 150 more yards in three straight games. Well, let's get into some more snap counts and stats, Dan. And
Before we do that, yeah. I have a couple quick, you know, rapid reactions to some of the things that you brought up there. I want to start with the Derek Carr situation. You said he's likely to be back. This is a stat from Jacob Gibbs, so maybe I can try out my first Jacob Gibbs impression. You can let me know how they go. And just a reminder for those listening, me and Jacob are boys. I love him. I think he will enjoy these, but I don't know. I hope he does. I think I know his sense of humor well enough to know that he will enjoy these impressions. But and Lord knows an impression of me would be a lot crazier than anything I can do for Jacob. But let me try my Jacob impression right here. So here we go. We know, just to set the tone and set the mood a little bit here, we know Jacob is a very reserved guy, reserved voice.
Yeah, they know Jacob. They know him. Yeah.
They know Jacobs. Here we go. All right, Adam. Week 10 average depth of target, 5.4 yards, Derek Carr, which is interesting because 5.2 yards, Jameis Winston. Average depth of target. Chris Olave's week 10 target share, 6% with Derek Carr at QB, 35% with Jameis Winston at QB. So really, when you think about it, and what we're looking forward to moving forward is if Jameis Winston isn't that quarterback and Derek Carr's injury forced him to miss a week, that really does boost up Chris Olave for week 11 and moving forward.
And then he would say, I'm curious what you guys think about that.
I'm curious what you guys think about that.
I like
any good.
Yeah,
rate that impression 1 to 10.
This is like a 3.
Oh, terrible!
It wasn't
terrible.
That good. You didn't really get his cadence. All you did was whisper, basically.
I know. I tried to. This was a mistake on my part.
You gotta listen to him. You gotta listen to him because there are.
I spent more time watching tape to prepare for the show than I should have time watching Jacob Gibbs tape from previous Beyond the Box Score shows to get the cadence down. That was a mistake. That impression wasn't good.
Yeah, you didn't get it. You didn't capture any of his nuances. I'm not gonna be able to do it either, but I could try next week or something. It's interesting. That's a very low ADOT for the Saints. Usually throwing the ball downfield all the time. I'm pretty much fine with Olave, but yeah, we have to remember that Michael Thomas did miss basically all of this game. Olave had a good game. Any other stats?
Any other Jacob Gibbs? Oh, reaction. So the other one is a Dan Schneier reaction to something you mentioned about Alexander Mattison leaving with a concussion, likely not to play. Shout out Thomas Schaefer, our producer, who keyed me onto a Ty Chandler touchdown run that was explosive and called back due to a penalty. I think Chandler will add an explosive element to this Vikings offense. Chandler is a player who I watched a lot of film at Tennessee. He was my diamond in the rough in that draft class 1 year after Khalil Herbert being my diamond in the rough. In the previous draft class, it hasn't proven correct yet, but maybe this is the opportunity that will showcase what he can bring to the NFL level. I believe he's an explosive runner. I think he's a better processor than people realize. And I think he adds just a different element of speed, just pure speed. We've seen what speed can add to backfields. Keaton Mitchell in Baltimore, Devin Achane in Miami. This is a possible another situation where, and I know the stats don't look great. Look, 15 for 45. This is not a great team in the run game in general. They run a ton of zone. They don't have much nuance to their rushing attack. But on some of those plays that get Chandler to the outside, I think he might add a different level of explosion to this offense. So if Madison is out with a concussion, I move Chandler way up my rankings at running back for week 11. I think he's going to be a free agent in most leagues. If you need a 1 week starter at running back, I think he's definitely someone who should queue up and move to the top of your waiver wire and potentially be willing to use a lot of budget if you need a win next week in fantasy football. Because I do think he could have a really good game.
They'll be at Denver, Minnesota. And if you talk about the Vikings and you kind of miss something important, like Schaefer's not going to let it slide. He's going to let you know about it for sure.
He's a huge Vikings fan.
He is. Yeah, they're on fire. Josh Downs played only 14% of the snaps. I really think you should not drop Josh Downs. He's barely played each of the last 2 weeks. He's 74% rostered. They're going into their bye. He scored 13.1 or more PPR fantasy points in all 4 games with Gardner Minshew starting. And he had 8 or more targets in 3 of those 4 games before really being hampered by a knee injury the last 2 weeks. The bye comes at a good time for Josh Downs. So if I were you, I would try to stick it out with Downs. Jonathan Taylor played 88% of the snaps. Looks like Zach Moss is done. It's just a handcuff now. How about Juju Smith-Schuster? He played 99% of the snaps, and he played 84% out wide, and Juju had 1 target. And Parker will be back, I assume, in 2 weeks. So I don't know what it means, but if you're in a deep league, Juju's all on the field all the time, but that was really disappointing. Keaton Mitchell, he played 11 offensive snaps. His first snap was a 39-yard rushing touchdown. Keaton Mitchell's second snap was a 32-yard reception. His fifth snap was a drop ball in the end zone. I watched all of his snaps. Weren't a lot of them. Like I said, only 11 for Keaton Mitchell. Figure out why didn't he play more. I mean, he did drop that ball. It wasn't like a terrible drop or anything. But he did have one play. I would say maybe his worst play in pass protection. He starts out on Lamar Jackson's right. He goes to block the right side. There's no one there to block. He cuts across the pocket to go to the left side. But in doing so, he bumps into Lamar Jackson, who's trying to advance up into the pocket. So they kind of collide. Jackson gets sacked. I don't know. I mean, it looked like a bad play by Keaton Mitchell, but I don't know. You know, I'm not a coach. I don't know what they were supposed to do there. I don't know why he didn't play more. Like, how do you not? The first two plays that he's in there, he accounts for about 65 yards and a touchdown, and he barely touches the ball. That makes no sense to me. But maybe it was the mistake in the pass protection. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good observation by you, because it really well could come down to that. If you don't, these teams that don't trust their running backs in pass protection don't play their running backs.
Yeah. Taysom Hill ran 16 routes. Juwan Johnson ran 30 routes. George Pickens.
Wait, you forgot about one more thing from that game.
What?
A.T. Perry. He tied Chris Olave for the team lead in routes run with 42 in week 10. Another Jacob Gibbs stat, by the way.
Nice. Oh, I had a couple of comments about your impression, if you'd like me to share them.
Let's see it. It was not good. I wanted better. I should have watched more tape
Lindsay,
on Jacob.
Lindsay K said, fabulous
impression.
Let's go,
Lindsay.
8.5 out of 10. But Adam Lee says, amazing impression, just as good as the performance of your barber.
Adam Lee. I mean, Adam, look, the hair has grown back nicely.
Yeah, it
the
looks
cut
good.
Looks good. It looks versus good. What we got over here from Hazer.
I mean, no, okay, this is one. Look, it's not a great hair day, but I actually got one of my better haircuts. And let me tell you.
Look at that.
I hope I didn't already talk about this on the air. I'm sorry if I'm repeating. I went to the barber, new guy. I found my guy. I love the barbers that use the razor at the end.
I do enjoy that too.
Oh, it's terrific.
The straight edge.
I almost feel like you can give me a terrible haircut. And if you give me the straight edge at the end, I'm fine with it.
It feels so good. It's so nice.
George Pickens, there was this whole hubbub about him not being introduced with the starters. He ended up playing 95% of the snaps. He played more than anyone other than Pickett and the linemen. And he had a bad game. James Conner, this was really interesting. James Conner was not the third down back. Tony Jones was the third down back. James Conner played 63% of the snaps. He got pretty much every carry by a running back. But this is a big deal. When James Conner was involved in the passing game and getting pretty much every snap, he was top 12, maybe top 5 good with Kyler Murray. And even without Kyler Murray, just an absolute fantasy stud. I don't know why he didn't play on third downs. Maybe it was because it was his first game back. But this is definitely something to keep an eye on with James Conner. And by the way, Kyler Murray did not throw a pass to his running backs in week 10. Jahan Dotson played 95% of the snaps. He had no catches on 2 targets at Seattle. Zach Charbonnet played 3 more snaps than Ken Walker. That is 3 straight games with more Charbonnet than Walker. But, you know, Walker had 20
Walker
touches.
Doesn't catch that touchdown. It's a bad Walker game again.
It is. And Will Levis. I think the reason I liked Will Levis against Tampa Bay was because I thought Will Levis could throw the deep ball pretty well. Tampa Bay's really bad against that. Levis was 1 of 14 on pass attempts of 15 or more air yards. He was really
not
bad.
Good.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break. We'll do some film review and our 4 big topics when we come back.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
New CBS Sunday.
You collect rewards, right?
This is how I make my living.
When something is lost.
Everyone's looking for something.
He finds it.
You strong swimmer?
So-so.
So-so. So-so's okay.
Justin Hartley stars.
How you survive, you make quick, smart decisions, and you never let panic take the wheel.
Sounds cool.
It is cool, actually. Very cool.
Tracker. New Sunday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back. It's Jacob Gibbs here with Dan Schneier. It's Adam and Dan.
That wasn't bad. That wasn't bad.
Yeah, he's got, there's like a rhythm to his voice.
You see, Adam, the thing is,
I don't think he does that.
No, he doesn't do that
at all.
I need to watch more tape.
He's never said the thing is. He's way too smart.
The thing is my thing. It's I got it. I'm working too much of my own isms into it. The impression. It's just, it's no good.
Who
I gotta
do you think
watch
the smartest guy we work with is? Who do you think did the best on their SATs?
Oh, from that standpoint. So I view smart in different. So you're talking book smart, not street smart.
Then. You could do well. I don't think any of us are all that. Heath is probably street smart. Like I can't change a tire. I can't do anything. Like Heath
I find myself to be more one of the highest street smart people here. Street smart.
You are street smart.
Well, what do we mean by street smart? Like, I don't mean like I'm a functional human being who can like fix something broken down or something like that and work with my hands.
Well,
but
I mean, yeah,
as far as being quick thinking, wit, being able to respond to things fast.
No, you're just talking about being witty. That's totally different than being street smart. Like, if I just put you,
street smart?
I don't know. If I put you out in the street and asked you to survive, I don't think you'd be able to do it. Heath is the only one I'd have any faith in.
That's probably right. Heath is probably the only one who could survive out in the wilderness or something on the street. I don't even know what that means, but street smart to me is more like quick thinking, processing, which, by the way, Heath is very smart at as well. We're all pretty good at that, but I would consider myself in the mix for that.
I'm going to look up street smart and see what it means.
But as far as book smart goes, who's the best SAT score?
Yeah, who do you think of the highest SATs?
My guess would be... RJ, well, are we including everybody?
No, just the people on the show.
Oh, just on the show. The people on the show, I guess I'll default to Jacob.
Yeah,
the best
that's kind of what I was
score.
Thinking.
I think
Chris is super smart, but I feel like he was a little bit of an academic underachiever back in high school.
Yes, so I completely agree. And I think Chris is very street smart too, my version and definition of what street smart would be.
I'm trying to look like up what street smart means.
Ours would actually be one of probably the top for street smart, for what I consider, like as Schaefer said in the comments, you're confusing street smart with being MacGyver. That's not what being street smart
no,
is.
No, I'm not, it's not, okay, this is what Google is saying. Or no, okay. kidshealth.org. Knowing how to keep yourself safe from strangers when you're alone or with other kids. That,
obviously, no, this is not what I'm referring to, obviously not.
Whether you're walking to school or the bus. Okay, being quick-witted and being street smart, that's like not even close to the same thing. That's like being tall and being skinny. They are completely different things.
I guess my whole life I've confused the two, or at least just my whole life it considered that when people say you're street smart, it means you're quick-witted. That's what I've always assumed.
Absolutely not. Like not even close. Okay. Yeah, this just from Office Depot. Street smart is not getting killed in the bad part of town. That's like right. part of it. It's just like being able to survive on your own. I don't know who wrote this. I love Dan Schneier.
You know. Thank you, Tyler.
Someone wrote in an email or a tweet, like kind of ripping you and Jamie, and they spelled both of your names wrong. And I was like, you can't, you lose right off the bat. What the hell are we talking about, by the way? Oh, film review. You want to just get into the big topics or what?
One quick thing on the film, because shout out Chris Towers, who wanted me to take a look at Sam Howell.
Yeah.
Was that your thing when you hear Sam Howell now? You do a little howl?
Yeah, it's kind of my thing, yeah.
I don't mind it, actually. I kind of in some ways intrigued by it and find it interesting. But he was talking about how the sack rate for Sam Howell has been down from 12.7% in the first seven games to 4.6% in the past three. And he's had a league high 153 dropbacks in those past three. So, you know, maybe there's been some progression from him. I know RJ White, we were discussing this as well. We talked about how there's been some offensive line changes. I got to say, Adam, the film wasn't what I was hoping it would be from a processing standpoint for Howell. I still have too many examples of him just not processing things fast. 3rd and 4, 8:30 in the second quarter, for those who want to track this or check this out on NFL Game, if you have the game film. This was a play he should have made. He had the look that Bienemy wanted him to get, stick route from 82. For whatever reason, he's staring at it, but he doesn't trust it. He doesn't throw it with anticipation. He takes the sack. 3rd and 3 later in the game, 5:03, quarter two. He's fooled pre-snap by Seahawks coverage, and they do a lot of trap coverages and things like that. He looks post-snap to where he expects things to be pre-snap. It's a two-man concept. Instead, he's missing Terry McLaurin, the whole shot on the corner route. There's just too many examples still of slow processing, in my opinion, from Sam Howell for me to feel like he's made improvement in that regard. Now, he still does things that are better than a lot of NFL quarterbacks. The throw he made to get that game tied was a throw that I think like one or two quarterbacks or three quarterbacks in the NFL are making. He's throwing it into a non-existent window with anticipation, with great ball placement. I also think his arm talent is incredibly underrated and has been since he was in the draft. Like, I tweeted the day after the draft, the day of the draft, it makes no sense that the NFL has overcorrected themselves after the year before of quarterbacks with Pickett and all those guys to let a guy like Sam Howell with his level of arm talent and the amount of starts he had at a Power 5 school fall to round 5. And it still doesn't make sense. The only guys who should be falling that late in drafts are guys with no arm talent. He has arm talent. And on the touchdown throw he had to Brian Robinson, he changed his arm slot. He does that a lot, the ability to roll out of tough, muddy situations. Some pockets he shouldn't escape, some he should, but then be able to change his arm slot and get the football into a spot. And that's what he has the ability to do, throw from different arm slots. It gives you such an advantage at the NFL level if you're a quarterback who can change your arm slot versus that you need the over the top, you need the shoulder squared, you need the set base. And so he still has things that I think a lot of other quarterbacks don't have. But so as far as what Chris asked me to look for on tape, I don't really feel like his processing has really sped up or improved to a major degree. And that will obviously, you know, hurt them at times.
Yeah. But the good news is, and this is something, our first big topic is about Brian Robinson. So I was just looking at their offense. I mean, this is something that absolutely blew my mind. They have the highest pass rate in the NFL. They throw on a higher percentage of their snaps than any team in football. The Commanders, that is so weird, because the whole thing that I was nervous about in the offseason was that they fired their previous offensive coordinator because they wanted to be a more physical downhill running team. And then that's why they brought in Bieniemy. And they're not that at all. They barely run. Lowest run
but
rate.
The enemy comes from KC, so maybe we just made a mistake there, because I mean, they were a pass first team.
That's
there.
What the reporting was. That was the report I read. I read it on the show. And they're anything but that right now. They've morphed into a passing team. So more on that in a second. I watched two players this morning. I really wanted to watch Josh Dobbs. I didn't get to that. But I watched Noah Brown. Mm-hmm. I want to see what all this is about. And I watched Kyler Murray. Because we had a question, one of our topics is to pick five league winners that nobody saw coming. Sure. He's going to be one that I choose. Noah Brown, I mean, so his role changed this past week with Nico Collins out. Noah Brown became an outside receiver. Usually he's playing in the slot, at least more often than not. That rhyme was hot.
Recycling's hot. Throwing trash on the ground is definitely not. You like that?
What is that, from Parks and Rec or something?
Nah, it's actually something I created as in a group project in sixth grade.
Nice. when I was in high school, we did like some Greek era stuff, and we performed like a little show, and I created, my character's name was Testicles.
So, you did that in what grade?
11th, 10th or 11th.
That's grade. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. you strike me as somebody who could have been in a different life, like a Trey Parker, Matt Stone type.
Thank you.
See that?
I don't know.
You kind of look like one of those two too, don't you? Has anyone told you that? Which one do you look like? I'm going to look it up right now. And Thomas, if you're somebody, get me this.
If I look anyone, it'd be Matt Stone, but I don't look anything like
it. It's only one of them. It's definitely not the other one. Okay.
I don't look like the blonde one.
Yeah. I guess I was kind of wrong
not at
now
all.
Looking at them. These are old pictures of them. When they were younger, you kind of looked like one of them.
You're thinking of Henry Rowan Gardner. Anyway, Noah Brown, basically everything Noah Brown is getting is downfield. Over the last 2 weeks, I looked at wide receivers with 8 or more targets, so a pretty low threshold. He is number one in explosive catch rate, number one in fantasy points per target, 9th in ADOT. He has 13 catches, Noah Brown, in his last 2 games. 13 catches, 9 of them have gone for 20 or more yards. It is big play after big play after big play. Sometimes he is completely wide open. Sometimes he makes a nice adjustment and CJ Stroud finds him. But for the most part, when I am amazed at Noah Brown, it's because I am amazed by CJ Stroud. CJ Stroud is playing so damn well, throwing the ball downfield so well. I'm a little skeptical that Brown can keep this going. I think if Nico Collins is back, I think you probably see fairly low target volume from Brown. And I'm not necessarily rushing to pick him up. Well, it's one of those things where I probably will put a claim in for him in any league he's available. However, I won't be surprised if it's a bad claim, but you have to give yourself the opportunity to see if this goes somewhere. I look at him, I think he's kind of slow. I don't see him beating man coverage a lot. And I am fairly skeptical of players who make so many of their plays downfield. But the way CJ Stroud is playing, if Nico Collins misses another game, I think Noah Brown as an outside receiver is a must start player, and it gets against Arizona next week too. So that could be awesome. And Kyler Murray, I thought he looked exactly like Kyler Murray with one exception. He did not throw the deep ball well. He missed Marquise Brown on the 28-yard touchdown. He threw deep to Rondale Moore. Didn't seem like a very good pass, although I think Moore wanted a pass interference or illegal contact. And then the game-winning play was a deep completion to Trey McBride. Badly underthrown ball. McBride made a terrific play on it. But if he can get that back, then I do think he can be a league winner because he ran extremely well. How about that scramble on third and 10?
Unbelievable.
13-yard pickup, but he probably ran for 70 yards on the play.
Yeah.
He looked like Kyler. And I was really impressed and really encouraged. Got ourselves potentially a must start here. And he could have had two touchdowns. I'll say one thing that would ruin him is if they keep this Clayton Tune garbage up at the goal line.
I mean, they will keep that up though, right? Like they're not gonna go back to Kyler, I don't think, because they want to keep him healthy.
It would have to be inside the 1 yard line, I think.
Sure. Yeah. I still don't think that's gonna hold him back anyway.
All right, let's go to our four big topics, and we start with one from Scott Shanks. Is Brian Robinson Jr. a set it and forget it RB1? So Dan broke down the film on the Commanders. I'll just give a little background here. Going into week 10, Brian Robinson was the number 12 running back in full PPR, which is obviously not his format, and number 23 per game. Then he scored 27.7 points in week 10. He's currently RB1. And in this week, he is now a top five running back for the season in every format. And per game, he's 12th in non-PPR, 13th in half, 15th per game in full PPR. So the question, Dan, is Brian Robinson Jr. a set it and forget it RB1?
No, he's not. He's a fine set it and forget it RB2, I think, given the state of the running back position. But I watched the tape this week, and I actually think there was more reason to be discouraged than encouraged about Brian Robinson moving forward from a fantasy football standpoint. Why do I say that? Well, I say that because there were carries early and touches early in this game for Antonio Gibson, something we haven't seen at all, not at all, but at all times this season. Also, Gibson was more effective as a runner in this game. For whatever reason, maybe it was the concepts they were running or the down and distances tipping off plays to the opposing defense. That is also always a part of it and a factor. But Gibson was more effective running the football in this game. And on the plays that Brian Robinson made, I charted them, the plays in the pass game. He had six receptions for 119. On only one of those was it a designed first read throw to Robinson. The others were scramble plays where Sam Howell off script found Brian Robinson. Now, you could argue that that will continue, but it doesn't seem like a good argument to make or a stable argument to make.
No, it won't. You're right.
Broken plays are hard to, you know, bank on happening over and over again. So I like that he's on the field for enough plays to get some of those broken play throws from Sam Howell, but hard to count on those. And I've always felt like he's a good talent. It's not a matter of talent for me. It's a matter of don't love how that offensive line blocks the run game. I don't really love their run concepts in general. Like you said, this is a drop back pass heavy team that doesn't really have much of a groove at all in the run game. Felt like Gibson ran the ball better in this game and got more touches and snaps earlier than he usually did. So I'm fine just putting this dude as an RB2 based on talent alone and the fact that he is in an offense that throws the running backs a decent amount, broken plays or not. But that's about the ceiling for me.
But they don't really throw to him that much. This was such a departure from the norm. Six catches, 119 yards and a touchdown. Usually he's two catches a game on average. And what I would say is he's solid. RB2, like Dan said. But if you have Brian Robinson and you need to win right now, you need to get in the playoffs, I think you should trade him. I love him this upcoming week, week 11 against the Giants. That should be great for him. But his next 3 weeks are Dallas, Miami, and a bye. And since I don't trust them to throw the ball to him, I don't think he's getting more than 10 to 12 carries in those games. He's been 10 or fewer carries in five of his last six games. They simply don't run the ball. Yeah. So this is the right time because you've got this great matchup for Robinson this week, and people might get excited about that. But I don't think, based on right now what we've seen, I don't think I'm going to want to start him against Dallas. I don't think I'm going to want to start him against Miami, and then he has a bye week. The fantasy playoffs are a little bit easier after that, but I'd be looking to sell Robinson. And look, I said he's 12th per game in non-PPR, 13th per game in half, 15th per game in full PPR. But on a per week basis, in his best format, non-PPR, only three top 12 finishes and only two finishes higher than RB12 in 10 weeks. So he typically does not get there. He's usually in the 15, 16 range, something like that on average. All right. Next up we have from Paps, week 15 through 17 DST planning. I went a little further because I went, you know, beyond the assignment. That's what we do here. I looked at basically rest of season DST scheduling. And this now is the time to start really thinking about schedules a little bit. Unless you're Dan and you just say, I don't really feel like doing this one, Adam. You do the entire research on this one, which is basically what happened. That's fine.
I didn't say it exactly like that, but it was largely like that. I said, you do the research and I will opine on your research and speak of what I've seen on film and schematically in X's and O's on the teams that you mentioned.
Well, the five best matchups for DSTs so far have been the Giants, the Patriots, the Panthers, the Jets, and the Bears. But I decided to replace the Bears with the Raiders. Mm-hmm. So the Bears with Justin Fields might not be a good matchup. But I kept them in consideration. But the teams that have the best playoff schedules, or let's just start with from here on out. The Kansas City Chiefs on a bye this week, Philadelphia in week 11. They're currently 74% rostered. And they're a really good defense. You should pick them up even to stash them against the Eagles if you don't want to play them against the Eagles. After the Eagles, they are at the Raiders, at the Packers, the Bills, and then your fantasy playoffs are the Patriots, the Raiders, and the Bengals. Four very favorable matchups there for the Chiefs, and they're good. I don't hate the Packers schedule. They have
Let me get a little in on the Chiefs real quick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Add something to this conversation since I didn't do any of the research.
Right. Which yeah, it's about time.
This is the best job I've seen schematically from Steve Spagnuolo since his 2007 season and the 2007 Super Bowl run with the New York Giants. From watching some film, the big reason the Chiefs are one of the best teams in the NFL this year is actually not the offense. It's Steve Spagnuolo's defense. He's mixing up coverages like I have never seen him before on the back end. He's not typically that type of coordinator, and he's doing things that are confusing opposing quarterbacks and leading to more sacks and more turnovers and the things that help your fantasy schedule. Kansas City Chiefs, I believe, will be a difference-making defensive special DST moving forward based on that and based on the schedule. They should be top priority for you right now, but move on to Green Bay.
Yeah, well, they have a gauntlet right now. Chargers, Lions, Chiefs. But then their last four games, including the playoffs, Kansas City, Giants, Bucks, they're an okay matchup. Panthers, Vikings, not bad for Green Bay. Houston is a team I wanted to highlight. They get Tennessee twice in the playoffs, but they get Arizona. Like, it's not great the next 2 weeks for Houston. So you don't have to own them, roster them now. Houston, Arizona, Jacksonville. Then we've got this stretch, Denver, the Jets, the Titans, the Browns, nice. And the Titans. So that's Houston. Very and they're nice. Not that bad defensively. If you want to stash the Rams at some point, they get the Giants in week 17, but you got a while before that. Right now in the immediate future, I like the Dolphins. They get the Raiders, the Jets, Commanders, Titans, and Jets. Their week 16 and 17 games are Dallas and Baltimore, so forget about the Dolphins then. But the next 5 weeks, the Raiders, Jets, Commanders, Titans, Jets for the Dolphins. They should be pretty healthy coming out of the bye, too. Let's see. There was Cleveland, which is, you know, widely rostered DST. They've got good schedule going forward, including the Jets in week 17. Detroit. Let's see. I've got Detroit. I got Chicago, Green Bay, New Orleans, and Chicago and Denver in their next five games. Detroit's looking good there. And Cincinnati. Let's see. Cincinnati at Baltimore this week. That might not be good, but then it's Pittsburgh. I think we're basically just looking at the last like 3 or 4 weeks for Cincinnati. Colts, Vikings, Steelers. Forget Cincinnati. Let's take them off. So the Chiefs are great. The Texans could be really good for their last four games. The Dolphins, not in the playoffs, but in the more immediate future. The Lions could be good down the stretch. And that's pretty much it. Two defenses that have awful playoff schedules are the Eagles. No. I'm sorry. The Eagles have Seattle, the Giants, and the Cardinals. They have a terrible schedule coming up. The Eagles have the Chiefs, Bills, Niners, and Cowboys. I don't think they're worth rostering. They haven't been a good enough DST to begin with. Chiefs, Bills, Niners, Cowboys. I would drop the Eagles. The Ravens are interesting. In their fantasy playoffs, they get the Jaguars and Niners on the road, and then the Dolphins at home. And the Raiders are going to be a reason why a lot of people make their fantasy playoffs. They've been such a great DST. They've had a very easy schedule. I would say let's maybe play it by ear. Let's see what happens. But at Jacksonville, at San Francisco, and Miami, if you're in a league where defenses get traded, you know, you want to trade the Ravens for the Chiefs or something like that, I think that's fine, you know, as part of a bigger deal. Let's take another break here. And when we come back, we've got league winners and running back rankings rest of season. We'll be right back on Fantasy Football Today.
Should you ever set foot outside of the hotel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow, now streaming on Paramount Plus, only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
All right, we're back to talk about league winners. Zuma says, going forward, who are the top five league winners that no one expected? And also, can you tell me what kids show Zuma is in?
Are you asking me that, or yeah. You asked that question as well?
No, I know the answer. I have kids.
Oh, of course I can't tell
it's
you
obviously
that.
It's obviously Paw Patrol. Come on.
Paw Patrol. I've never heard of Paw Patrol until today.
I can't wait for you to have kids in sometime in the next 4 years or so. And I get to go through relive all of these experiences through you. Top five league winners for you that no one expected.
So I'm going to start with Tank Dell. Tank Dell is the one I want to start with here for a multitude of reasons. First of all, shout out Jacob Gibbs. I just called him Jibs because I said I was, and sometimes I do that. You know, the Heath Keith thing where I never said Keith. And for some reason you guys tried to say, I said Keith, even though I definitely said Heath, but it rolled off the tongue weird. And I do that sometimes when I'm too fast
right.
to go from one word to the
next.
Like
when I cursed last week, but also you still can't say,
no, that was an actual curse.
No, it wasn't.
Everybody,
you still can't say Devon Achan. Like earlier today you were Devin Achan. So you never get both names right.
No, I say Devon Achan.
You definitely do not say Devon Achan. We'll Devin check Achan. The tape. You know those commercials where they throw the challenge flag? I would love to do that right now.
Yeah, you got that. Okay. Well, Tank Dell's going to make the list for me. Shout out Jacob Gibbs. He joined the 30-30 club, which Gibbs talks about 30 with a 36% target share and a 9% are air yarded share. I think when it comes down to Tank Dell, for me, I look at him as a player who's film at Houston was unbelievable. He won at all three levels, which is rare. About 3 to 5 receivers I watch every draft class win at all three levels. What do I mean by that? I mean he wins on the immediate routes, the quick slants, the quick outs, the quick in-breaking routes, the stuff designed around the line of scrimmage. He wins on the intermediate level, the deep ins, the digs, the deep outs, and then he wins on the vertical plane as well, creating separation. And he does it against man coverage as well. And this is why CJ Stroud made it a point to tell the Texans to draft this guy. This is why CJ Stroud looks for him in big moments. This is why CJ Stroud is going to continue to come his way with the football. We see it in the target share percentages. We see it in the air yardage percentage. He can beat you in a multitude of ways, Tank Dell, just because he's 5'8". Doesn't mean he's only a slot receiver. He proved that at Houston. He's proven already at the NFL level. So I think he can be one of these league winners no one expects to be over the stretch run, just dominating targets, making big plays, making bomb touchdowns for the Texans down the line as that offense continues to grow and as CJ Stroud continues to dominate. So he was the guy I wanted to put top of my list, Adam. Another guy I want to throw in there next on the list is Trey McBride. Okay, Trey McBride on a per route basis, and this is a Jacob Gibbs stat, so I am going to try Jacob Gibbs impression part 2. Yeah, yeah, Adam, a guy I really want to talk about, Trey McBride. So, well,
no, it'd be more like a guy I really want to talk about is Trey McBride.
That's the guy I really want to talk about is Trey McBride. I'm curious if you guys are seeing this, starting to dig in some really, really interesting numbers on Trey McBride.
Yeah. Keep going.
Trey McBride has been as good as any tight end in the NFL in 2023. Routes run, 246 for Travis Kelce, 174 for Trey McBride. Target per route run rate. How about this one? Kelce, 29%. Trey McBride, 28%.
This is yards not per route how run. He's speak. This is if you somehow, like, if your soul went into the body of Jacob Gibbs. Like, this is not a Jacob Gibbs impression. This is you no, talking not. Differently.
I didn't watch enough tape. But target per route run rate for Travis Kelce, 29%, 28% McBride. Yards per route run. McBride is pacing with Travis Kelce with 2.40 versus 2.43. This dude is somehow the focal point of the passing game. We thought maybe earlier in the year it was Josh Dobbs. We thought maybe that. No, this is the new system in Arizona, and it operates through its tight end. We saw it with Zach Ertz. We're seeing it now with Trey McBride, who offers more juice and more toward the passing game than Zach Ertz can at this point in his career. We saw it with a new quarterback with the change from Dobbs to Kyler Murray. And I don't see any reason why it won't continue. He's pacing, putting up big elite type numbers and getting crazy amounts of target share and targets. So I think Trey McBride could essentially be the league winner, another league winner that no one expects.
Yeah, that was Dan's Jibs impression. All right, listen, go a little faster here because I still have to get my five in.
Okay, then three is going to be Javonte Williams. We talked about him a lot on last week's Beyond the Box Score. Very excited to see where he goes tonight in this game against the Bills, against a defense that plays a lot of too high. But just think about this. His avoided tackle rate splits were 13% in the first four games and 23% since returning from that injury he had midseason. And that just kind of shows where he's evolving into. So I think he can be it. And then David Montgomery, throw my boy in there, David. I mean, look at him, Adam. It breaks off a long touchdown run. I don't know, but I heard in week five Beyond the Box Score about 5 weeks ago from Adam, he can't break off the big long touchdown run.
Without stepping out of bounds.
He didn't step out of bounds. He was in bounds.
He didn't. He did not. No, good for him. I don't know if he's going to be a league winner because he doesn't catch any passes and isn't the predetermined goal line guy anymore, so it seems. But no, he's going to be worth starting. We'll be ranking him in our next big topic. And who's your last guy?
And the last guy for me, somebody you brought up a little bit earlier, but Jonathan Taylor. I mean, maybe you don't call it unexpected, but it's pretty much being unexpected considering where people have felt about him for the last 2 months. And he dominates the backfield in week 10, 23 of 24 rush attempts. This is according to Jacob Gibbs, 89% snap rate, 79% route participation rate. That's the part that really excites me. They're really getting him involved as a receiver in this new offense with Shane Steichen. So, and that's been something that's kind of been trending toward in the right direction all of his career at the NFL level. After I think he had 13 total receptions at Wisconsin or something. Wow. And an insanely low number there.
My five are, say it with me, Dan, Devon Achane.
Devon Achane.
He's going to be a league winner. Michael Pittman, his six games that he's played with Gardner Minshew, he has a 31% target share. And Pittman's 17-game pace, and he's not good yardage on the catches, but his 17-game pace is 125 catches. Just under 1,300 yards and six touchdowns on almost 11 targets, about 10 and a half targets per game. So Pittman is, he has had a very tough schedule recently. Cleveland, New Orleans, Carolina, and New England, actually. I mean, they give up a lot of points to wide receivers, but go look at who they've played. They've played maybe the hardest wide receiver schedule, and he's come through with big games, good or big games in everyone. His schedule gets easier after this. So Pittman's going to be a league winner. My only concern is that they get super run heavy, which they want to do, but they have some tougher opponents on there. I don't know that they'll be able to. Trey McBride and Dalton Kincaid I put on there, but they are pretty interesting because if things stay the way they are, then Kincaid and McBride are going to be awesome. But Dawson Knox and Zach Ertz are eligible to return in week 12. I haven't heard anything on either of them. I would assume Knox stays out a little longer than that because he had surgery. But I don't know what happens when those guys come back. I feel like for Arizona, it won't be a big deal that it'll be McBride. For Buffalo, they might go back to the way things were because as much as we like it for Kincaid, there's a lot of talk. What's wrong with Baltimore, with Buffalo's offense? I think they really value Dawson Knox and their two tight end sets. So I could see Kincaid falling off, but we'll see. And Kyler Murray was my last guy. So Achane, okay. Pittman, two tight ends, McBride and Kincaid, and Kyler Murray. Jonathan wants us to rank these running backs rest of season.
Okay.
Montgomery, Gibbs, Swift, Rashad White, Achane, and Keaton Mitchell.
He's got them all. He says, P.S.
He has all of them. Did you yawn? Nice. Did you yawn? Was that a yawn?
Maybe, but it has nothing to do with any quality of the show or anything. This is just a natural human body reaction. Sometimes there are yawns that happen. Okay, Adam, and that was less of a yawn, more of a I'm drinking a seltzer, and you know I need to digest. It's like a weird digestion thing that happens sometimes with seltzers.
Sure. You know what? You're lucky I never drink seltzer, so I can't say how ridiculous that is, but that absolutely...
No, and nothing will ever top your ridiculous take that seltzer is completely different than water.
Completely different from water.
It's not even close. You just add carbonation to water. That is water, just carbonated. That can't be completely different.
It tastes
completely different.
Carbonation
is red versus blue, okay? Completely different is coffee versus tea.
Completely different is street smarts
versus water.
Street smarts versus wit is completely different.
Well, I learned that one today, and you are right.
So you have no credibility in this area. Anyway, we're talking about both Lions running backs, DeAndre Swift, Rashad White, Devon Achane, and Keaton Mitchell.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I have to put Keaton Mitchell last. I think that's the easiest one right now. Like, you have to.
Sir.
But doesn't mean it'll stay that way, but that's what you have to do right now. All right, well, you want to rank them first?
Sure.
What, up to you.
To no one's surprise, David Montgomery's my 1-1 here.
Get the hell out of here.
Mean
who really else should I put
it? Who else would you what do you, how is this a get the hell out of there kind of take? Tell me who else definitely belongs ahead of him.
I think I would take Swift over him. I would have to take Swift over him.
No way.
I'm sorry, not Swift, Gibbs. I'd have to take Jacob. I'd have to take Gibbs over him.
Well, you could take Jacob over him, but as far as Jahmyr Gibbs goes, I was close. Gibbs is my number two, so it's Monty then Gibbs for me. I was back and forth between them, but I just trust Montgomery's role more. And I know they're starting to get creative at using Gibbs in the red zone, but I think it's going to lean back toward Montgomery toward the end of the season. And I just really love the Lions' offensive line, their play caller. This is an offense that works. There's so few NFL offenses that work. I want guys in offenses that work, especially in the run game, where there's even fewer offenses that work. So I have those two, 1 and 2. I have Achane 3, your boy, who could be a league winner, according to you. Rashad White 4, DeAndre Swift 5. Here's my thing with Swift, why he's lower on the list. I haven't liked what I've seen from Swift. I think a lot of Swift earlier this year was great blocking from the Eagles offensive line, opening up massive holes. And that's not happening to the same degree now. Hurts being hurt, Jalen Hurts being injured doesn't help. Playing hurt doesn't help the entire offense at all. And I think Swift is a candidate to potentially get injured. It's been, you know, a very injury prone player in his career. And if not, I've already seen
your 1-1 on this list has been hurt twice already this year. And you're going to play the injury card
Fine, take the injury card. I'll say this: Kenneth Gainwell has played more snaps lately than he did during Swift's big breakout run. And just generally speaking, I haven't liked what I've seen from Swift lately. Not necessarily sure I ever did as an individual with the Eagles this year outside of the speed. So I would go him. And then obviously last would be Keaton Mitchell.
I have a very different order than you. And some people are ranking these in the chat and they have very different orders too. So it's hard. It's really hard. Gibbs 1, Achane 2, no, Achane 1, Gibbs 2. No, Gibbs 1, Achane 2. I guess I have some concern about workload for Achane and if he can stay healthy. What?
You just love explosive backs like that can break a big one. What about David Montgomery, who does all the little things right?
You got to have a role in the passing game. He has.
Do you? If you're on that good of an offense, I agree with you in general. Trust me, don't paint me in that corner of not believing in a passing game, running backs. But when you're one of these guys, like the Derrick Henry, like the guys who are just behind an amazing O line, the offense functions at a high level. The only thing that scares me is what you said earlier: will he lose some of the red zone role that was all his earlier in the year? I just tend to believe that he'll get most of that back.
All right, I'm going Gibbs, Achane. The last two are going to be White and Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
Swift versus Montgomery is very difficult for me at 3-4.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'll go Montgomery because Swift has not been running the ball well. I'm hoping that he'll have a little resurgence coming off the bye, but he does have...
And he doesn't get involved in the pass game
yes,
that much
does.
Either.
Yes,
so what do you
does.
Love him?
Of course no, he does. Look at
Let's
his game log.
I'm looking at the game log now.
Go ahead. 5-4-3-2-1 until Dan is wrong. Ready? 5.
Well,
four,
there's a good chance Adam will be right because he is.
Dude.
He's a stack more. He knows stats better than I don't know. No, actually, I was 100% correct.
What are you talking about? Man. All right,
I'm looking at it right now. Let me tell you because I have it right in front of me. His targets in the last three games: 2, 3, and 2.
It's a lot better than Montgomery, and the targets in the
Not good. 2, 3, and 2 is good.
How about the three games before that? He had 20 targets in those games.
8, 6, 14. Then he had 1, 3, 1 in the three games before that. So
wait,
if
a
you
second.
Want to cherry
you're
pick
looking
three
at
game
catches.
Sample size,
you're not
there are three different
you're
sample
looking
sizes.
At, you're
from.
Looking at catches, not targets.
No, I'm looking at targets.
You
I'm
are so street smart. You can't tell the difference between targets.
Nope,
and catches.
I'm looking
catches.
At targets right now.
You just
weeks 1, 2, and 3. He had 2, 3, and 2 targets.
You didn't say
week 6, 7, 8, and 9. He had 3, 3, and 2.
Yes, and you incorrectly said weeks 4, 5, and 6. You said 8, 6, and 4. It was 10, 6, and 4. That equals 20. 10, 6, 4, I was sorry. Right.
For targets.
Yes, exactly, for targets. All right.
So with one three-game stretch, he had a lot of targets. In two of the three-game stretches, he had no targets.
All right, well, how about just for the season?
Essentially.
DeAndre Swift has 35 targets in 9 games. David Montgomery.
That's not that great.
David Montgomery has what? How many? 10 targets? I don't even know.
That's Let's probably see. A bad stat by you. Let's
10 targets in 6 games.
Versus 30. I'm not comparing those two from a target standpoint, by the way. I'm just saying one. Okay.
I'd say Swift has a role in the passing game. Montgomery doesn't. All right.
Call that a big role in the passing game.
3.5 targets per game. It's not great, but it's better than 1.5. All right.
I wasn't saying comparing him to Montgomery. I was comparing him versus the NFL and versus what we need as fantasy managers.
But okay. Anyway, what do you think tastes more similarly? Coke and Pepsi or water and seltzer?
Water and seltzer, obviously.
Are you kidding me?
What are you crazy?
Are you kidding me?
Are you crazy?
No, you're crazy.
Coke and Pepsi don't taste anything alike. They have different sugary flavors.
I mean, yes, they taste different.
Water and seltzer taste it. If you have a regular seltzer, I do the flavored seltzers. Those don't count. If you do a regular seltzer versus a water, it tastes exactly the same minus the carbonation.
Minus the
carbonation gives it somewhat of a taste. It doesn't give it a massively different taste.
Yes, it does.
How can anyone say that water... Oh my God. How can anyone say that water and seltzer are completely different things when they are the same thing, but add carbonation?
Okay. If you add carbonation and you add sugar,
the ingredients are exactly the same. Actually,
Every drink has water in it, man. Like every drink is water.
Every drink has multiple ingredients in it. That's what makes them different. Seltzer and water have the same ingredients in it.
Dude, you are getting crushed in the chat.
You're getting crushed by logic. Seltzer and water have the same ingredients in it. Pepsi and Coke have different ingredients.
This is definitely a Twitter poll.
Milk and Coke have different ingredients.
Let's let Schaefer opine and we'll sign off.
Milk was a bad call. Milk was a bad choice.
Schaefer, what do you think? Which two things taste more alike? Coke and Pepsi or water and seltzer?
Water and seltzer.
Obviously. More-
water and seltzer... The only thing that's different is it's carbonated.
Right.
I know, but it's a huge difference. Huge difference.
According to you.
And there's no sugar in it. You try to say that there's sugar in seltzer. There's no sugar in it.
No. I didn't say that. There's no sugar in seltzer. I'm saying, seltzer's the same as water. It just has carbonation in it. Okay, well, Coca-Cola has that plus some sugar. Like, it's just, they're all water. They're all water-based. But the carbonation makes things taste so different.
That was a random that rant made. That
you need to check the YouTube poll too. Who has more street smarts, Azer or Dan?
Oh no,
that's a good one.
I'm always gonna lose these.
No, I'm definitely in your tier of bad street smarts.
Yeah, at least I know what they are. Dan would be like abandoned on a mean street somewhere, and he'd be like. Oh, well, let me tell you this quick joke about the horse that went into the bar. You know, like, okay, we'll leave this guy alone. All right, we're out of here, everybody. Thanks for another fun edition of Beyond the Box Score. And we'll talk to you tomorrow with the waiver wire. Actually, we have a show tonight. 7:30.
Live stream.
Yeah, baby. Live stream tonight with Street Smart, Heath, and Tara. We'll talk to you later, everybody. See ya.
Original docuseries on Paramount Plus. Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire, now streaming on Paramount+.